Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 47, and I'm Libya, your host. And this week, we have two returning guests.
Hi, I'm Malcolm from Las Vegas.
Hi, I'm Josh from LA, trapped in my apartment today.
All right, so let's get on with the news. First item I have is that there's a new pilot for a cop series that's based on Grimm's Fairy Tales. And that's supposed to be produced by Angel and Buffy alum David Greenwalt. Though I think technically he's only Angel, but the article said Buffy. And
he might have worked on Buffy like towards the end a little bit.
Okay, because I just don't remember seeing his name on Buffy. But I'm like, all right, working on Angel works for me. I'm happy. The other thing I have, I told you guys last week I was going to check into the whole Fringe thing. We had a disagreement about what the ratings were. I think we saw two different varying articles, but this week the ratings are in again, and it says that the Fringe ratings are holding steady and that they're good and that they are as good as or better than they were Thursday. So that's very good, because everybody pretty much assumed they pushed it to Friday to push it out the door, and that doesn't look like that's happening. So I'm excited about that. Go ahead.
I think it was probably Fox's intention, so it's nice to see their plan foiled.
Yes, because that would give them justification, and so far that's not happening. So I'm excited. And on the negative side, the CW preempted Smallville and Supernatural this week, which caused quite a buzz. And their reasoning behind it was they figured that Vampire Diaries was going to suffer in the ratings because it was going up against American Idol. And so they tried to preemptively strike that, except that that didn't happen at all. The Vampire Diaries ratings were exactly the same as they always are, which means that they're immune to American Idol. And so CW has egg on their face and a lot of hate mail. But
yeah, well, it was only a week. Fans need to calm down.
Yes, I totally agree. I was actually quite surprised at how venomous all those...
Yeah, when they announced it, my Facebook news feed just started exploding with people ready to destroy CW, and I'm like, that's kind of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Right, because if you destroy CW, you get no more Supernatural.
At all. Yeah, exactly.
Let's move on to the shows, and the first one we have up is House, and this week's episode was pretty much... House dealing with the kid. I can't remember the daughter's name. Something. She's short.
Yeah. The little girl. He's doing like the mind games with her or something. Or like
he's trying to train her so that she can get into that school.
Right.
And that was cute, sort of, because you're not sure why he's doing it.
It was cute, and I kind of liked how it sort of revealed like this sort of caring side of House that you rarely ever see.
I think part of it was, I think initially it was exactly what he said it was. He was just trying to get the girl in so that Cuddy wouldn't have to fuss, but all the time he spent with that kid he actually started to care about her. I agree.
Yeah.
The other storyline involved I said Sam Adama. I don't actually know what the actor's real name is. But I was like, oh, it's Sam. I like him.
That's
I like
that. Who that was. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I really like that actor.
Yeah.
So I was really happy to see him, and I didn't really care that the plot for that was kind of see-through.
Honestly, I don't even remember what it was.
It was basically... He's the drill instructor, and then the kid they both get sick, and they reveal that that's their father and son.
Right, right. Yeah. It was interesting, but, you know, at the same time, I'm like, okay, I saw this coming a mile away.
Right.
But,
well,
you know, it's House, and House is nothing if not predictable.
Exactly. So I wasn't really surprised by that. Was that this week or last week about the Chase and the... Oh, it was this week, right? Chase and his picture? Was all over Facebook and
the tiny penis. Right, yeah, and he's like hunting down all the women that he had a threesome with.
Right. That was awesome. And the whole point of the message was stop being a hound dog. You know, she called him a slut.
Yeah.
And
And it turned out to be like the sister of one of the girls or something like that.
Well, because he had been hitting on one sister, and he ended up sleeping with the other one. And not realizing
the first sister was like, well, I don't sleep with guys on the first date. And he just sort of was like, okay, well, then the hell with you.
Right.
And then afterwards, he like asked her out for real. And she's like, no, are you kidding me? You're a slut.
That was awesome. That was all pretty good. I mean, I don't think Chase necessarily learned anything about himself other than he needs a better password.
Yeah. Well, and at this point in time, if your password is still password, you deserve to be hacked.
I completely agree. All right, so next show we want to talk about is Chuck. What do you guys think?
I'm trying to remember what this one was. This was the one where Sarah has to sort of prove her loyalty by killing Casey. Am I thinking that right?
No, she doesn't have to kill Casey. She has to break this guy out of prison. But yeah, she has to prove her loyalty to the Volkoffs, to Volkov.
Right.
And her mission is to break some bodyguard that's super bad guy out of prison. And Chuck and the gang...
The guy who's got, like, the key to his, like, database.
Right. That guy.
Yeah. Okay.
That's not the point of the episode. The point of the episode is this is the episode where we get to see Sarah clad head to toe in leather.
You are right, sir.
She also looked like her Mass Effect character.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was strange, but
if she ever wears a black wig, she's gonna look like her Mass Effect character from now until eternity.
Well, that's true, but I just was like, I really didn't like this episode at all. I mean, yes, you guys got eye candy, but it didn't do anything.
I thought the birthday cake thing was funny, how they were distracting the guard with a birthday party rather than like just knocking him out.
I like the thought of Chuck as the top dog in prison as just being hilarious.
But yeah, I agree. It's overall kind of a weak episode, and like you sort of feel like this is getting to the end.
Yes, I'm like, please end strong. That's all I ask at this point. I don't expect Chuck to get another season. I just want it to end well, and then I'll be happy.
Yeah, same here.
All right, I think that's all I have. Unless you guys have anything else to say about Chuck, I think that's all I got. Because I can't say anything good, then, you know.
No, I think that Morgan and Alex are really, really cute together. I do
they
like
them. They
are. Yes. Yeah. And I actually do like how Casey is kind of accepting their relationship, and he thinks that Morgan's a good guy. And so that's not a problem anymore.
Since the episode where Alex came out in Morgan's vintage Back to the Future shirt.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And that was hilarious.
Yeah, he didn't care. He was like, she looked cute in it. He's like, oh, dude, you're totally in love.
But I love, like, all the bits where, like, they're showing her, like, eating pizza and drinking orange juice in slow motion. You're watching the drips just fall slowly and just barely missing the T-shirt.
Yeah.
I was cringing.
I know. I was cringing too. Because I was like, no, not your perfect shirt. Yeah. But, okay, anyway, let's move on to the cape.
Uh-huh.
And anyone have anything to say? I mean, this is the second week? Third week. This is the third week.
This is episode four, actually.
Yeah, but they had two episodes in the first week, so.
This is the third week, yeah.
So, what do you guys think so far?
I still can't watch it.
It's becoming more and more of a chore for me to watch now. Like, I promised myself I would give it six episodes, so I've got two more weeks before I finally write it off. But it is just really not doing anything for me overall as a series.
And considering that I actually write about how dumb it is to fight in a cape, I couldn't see myself watching it ever.
Well, the fact that he uses the cape as a weapon is halfway interesting, but I have to say, I like the main guy in the pilot. I thought he had something, but now he feels very blah.
He's becoming more and more generic with every episode. The Orwell storyline, I'm like, if you need to reveal that she is his daughter very soon, or I am going to be so mad.
Well, just reveal a deuce. I think that she's interesting, and they're not really doing anything with her other than, you know, she'll show up and give information, and then she'll disappear. And yeah. If that's his daughter, really, he couldn't recognize her because she had on a half mask? I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the other thing. And, like, just the whole thing with the train, and I find this Scales character to just be, like, way too focused on for a henchman.
Right.
Pretty much.
Well, Scales, the only thing they've shown about him is that he's a really good fighter, but he's not high in the brains department. So I don't see him long for this world. He does not seem that intelligent to me. I did like the fact that they put Richard Schiff in a cape costume. I thought that was hilarious.
I just found that hilarious because it's Richard Schiff.
Exactly. That was pretty much my entire reaction, too. I was like, is he wearing, like, a freaking Superman outfit? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, that alone was worth the episode, but it's not worth the series.
It's not worth the series.
Right.
And, like, I want them to go back to more stuff with the wife, because she's, like, the only interesting part of the show anymore.
I could see that. I could see that. They just need... I like them spending more time with the circus, too, and him interacting with those guys and getting to know them, because it felt really weird that they're trying to pull off a robbery on the same train that he's trying to do justice. I was like, if you guys talk to each other, this wouldn't happen.
It sort of surprised me that he was so taken aback that they would try to rob a train. I'm like, you knew going in that these guys are criminals.
Right, exactly. And they made that very clear, too. They were like, our name is the Carnival of Crime, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
We're not trying to hide that. Yeah.
Has Orwell started fighting yet?
No.
No.
I might tune in for that, because maybe that'll be like that scene from Serenity all over again.
Oh, it will never be as good as that scene from Serenity.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. She's right now, the only thing we've seen her do is, like, ride a motorcycle, I think.
And yeah. She did a little, like, acrobatic stuff, but that's about it.
Yes. Anyway, all right. Again, with not saying stuff good, let's move on. So we're going to talk about... Of course, I pick another thing not to talk good about. The next show we want to talk about is Being Human. Last week I hadn't seen it yet, and so this week I've watched the pilot and most of the second episode. I missed the first 10 minutes of the first episode.
Okay.
Did you like the pilot?
Not really. I did like the vampire way more than I thought I was going to, because... In the British version, I don't like the vampire that much, so I wasn't expecting to like him. But I actually really liked him in the American version. But on the reverse end, I hated the werewolf. So
he's a lot whinier than
in the version. You hit it. You nailed it. That's exactly my issue with him, is that he whined so much about how much my life sucks more than anybody else's. And the ghost girl is like, well, at least you have a life and you can leave the house. And
they did that in the UK one, but I don't remember George being as whiny as Josh is in this.
Oh, he is so unlikable.
What about the ending of the pilot?
I did think that the ending was interesting enough for me to be like, all right, I kind of want to see how people get out of this room.
And I thought they resolved it in a decent enough way.
Of course, since I missed the first 10 minutes, I don't know how she got out of the room.
Aiden gets a voicemail from Josh saying, I'm in the room, my sister's in here with me, please help. And he uses vampire speed to go out, open the door, pull her out, and close the door before he totally wolfs out on her.
Yeah, and I thought they were setting up a really, really good tension moment with how that was going to play out, because if he had killed his sister and then found out later that Aiden didn't come save her because he was too busy eating, oh, that would have been great.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome, but that's not what they did.
But they might. They left the door open for that, hey, we might go way off the rails. And they did interviews with the creators of the U.S. version, said that they're going to use the longer season to do a lot of things. They did say that the very beginning is going to be pretty much the same thing. They're going to change a couple of things, but then they're going to go in a totally different direction and let the series take, let the characters dictate where it's going to go.
Like, I thought it was interesting how they brought his sister into it, but then having him shut it down by the end of the second episode was just kind of like, well, now we have nowhere to go with this sort of interesting diversion.
Exactly. Like, I did think that the sister storyline was interesting, but by the second episode, he's like, I'm too dangerous, go away. And I know that if that was my brother, I wouldn't have taken that for an answer, because he's basically like, I could have killed you. Like, especially if I heard him on the phone,
and,
like,
and
if
she seems like the person who wouldn't take that for an answer.
Exactly.
I think they kind of just put that on the back burner so that they could finish up with the rest of the backstory of the ghost. Because, I mean, they've got to finish up that stuff.
I understand what you're saying as far as story goes, but when you're watching it, it doesn't make sense. If you're going to do that, make it make sense.
It makes me a little bit impatient just because I already know what her backstory is from having watched the UK version. So to see them like do a little reveal here or a little reveal there, knowing what it's ultimately going to be, just makes it very tedious for me.
That's true.
I keep hoping that they're going to twist it, that they're going to change something.
I don't think so. I think they're going down that same road that... I'm not going to spoil it for the people who don't know.
One thing I have to say I do like about it, the character of Bishop, who is based off of Herrick in the UK version.
Right.
He is awesome.
That's true. He's played by a much better actor. I think that the British version, usually the British actors are really good, but I thought that Herrick was the weakest link on that show. He was awful.
Herrick was too blah, but, and I can't remember this actor's name who plays Bishop, but I mean, he was Lucifer in Supernatural. He was Jacob on Lost.
Yeah, he's really good. So
he just brought it. He really brought that character to life.
Yeah, I totally agree. So he almost makes me want to give the show a chance, but man, Josh has to do something because I can't stand his character right now. Something has to happen to make him tolerable. Because the ghost, even though she's kind of blah, she doesn't bother me one way or the other. Like,
She's got a dorky side to her that I kind of enjoy.
She doesn't bother me, so I could watch her. She's unobjectionable, and I do like the vampire. I just hate that the werewolf guy so much. He's just too annoying at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny. I know a person who never watched the British version, so they're coming at being human from just this U.S. version, and he loves the werewolf. The werewolf is his favorite character. So I wonder if it's a combination of we know, because I'm bothered by the werewolf, but for a different reason. I don't like when he's changing and he doesn't scream like a girl. It just bothers me.
Well, does your friend? I find it interesting. Does your friend like the werewolf and not the vampire?
He just likes the werewolf the most out of all the characters. And I don't see how you couldn't like the vampire. And it's hard to make a read on the ghost because, oh, man.
Yeah,
I don't know what they're going to do with that character. Like, she's not going to be obsessing over making tea, right?
Yeah. She'll be obsessed over making coffee. That'll make it American.
All right, let's move on to Castle, which was an exceptionally good episode this week.
Fantastic episode. I was beside myself with how great this was.
Yeah, this was definitely the highlight of Monday. Everything else was in second place.
Oh, yeah.
One, the storyline. Usually when they do a super serious storyline, especially dealing with Kate's mom, I kind of roll my eyes because it doesn't feel like a Castle episode. But this week they really did a good job that it still felt like Castle, and it was still serious, and it really worked.
Yeah. And like they weren't afraid to like really take it to the dark side, and just the scene between Castle and his mom, where she like basically just lays out for him, like, I am scared for you every day you do this.
Yeah,
and I think it was her who also pointed out, like, listen, You've written plenty of mysteries. You don't need to be this involved with the police as you are.
And that's, it's not the reason. Writing a book is not the reason why you're doing this.
Yeah. I found it interesting how they that they fleshed out more what her mom was doing that ultimately led to her death. And it wasn't really what I was expecting it to be. Like, it was more nuanced, and there was more of a conspiracy, but not, like, the kind of conspiracy I was expecting.
Well, I like how they took us down a couple of different roads. Like, they're like, okay, so her mom got killed because she was trying to do neighborhood watch, and so the drug dealers wanted to kill her. No, her right. mother got killed because of this other reason. No, and so they took us down a couple different alleys, and mm-hmm. I thought it was all pretty good. I didn't guess. Usually on Castle, I can figure out who the killer is or whatever pretty quickly. And then they
left it open-ended with they finally get the guy, and you find out that this guy is only, like, a part of it.
Right.
And there's something much bigger and more sinister going on.
Well, I do like that, but I don't know if that whole ongoing storyline for Castle is necessarily going to work. I hope it does. But I'm
willing to give them the benefit of the doubt with this just because the writing this season has been so incredibly strong.
Right. I also think that the whole Castle and Beckett relationship took a really interesting turn, and I think Castle really took a moment to think about it.
Yeah.
And that really, you know, of course, my shipper side was very happy with that.
Yeah. And, of course, Ryan and Esposito, when they get kidnapped, was just awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Like, I absolutely loved it when the guy was like, okay, we can do this the easy way where you tell me what you know and I shoot you in the back of the head, or you can jerk me around and I subject you to torture. And they're both like, yeah, we're going to jerk you around. Sorry.
Well, they were all good up until he started threatening to blow off kneecaps, and then it was all different.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was good. That was a good episode. Thumbs up. It's probably one of the best ones they've had in a while.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Next thing we want to talk about is White Collar, and the second episode that it's been back. And this deals with, if we're talking about serious stuff, White Collar is normally a nice, fun show, but now we're dealing with the conspiracy and the music box, and sometimes the music box conspiracy is interesting and sometimes not. This one was pretty cool because it was flashback. We got to see the beginning.
This was a really cool flashback episode, but it started to stretch credibility when, like, it seemed like every character met each other and got on board at the exact same moment in this flashback.
Oh, you mean like the other con artist chick? I forgot her name.
Yeah.
That was a little suspicious that she showed up then, but I do like the fact...
And then the other agent, whose name I can never remember, he joins the task force. And it seemed like for everything that's been happening to hinge around this original con, for them to wait three seasons to tell us about it is kind of like,
Well, he spent 3 years in prison, so you have to remember that. He did the con, he got arrested, he spent like 3-5 years in prison, and then the story starts right when he breaks out. So that kind of makes sense that there was like a holding period, because who wants to watch him sit around in prison? That's not that interesting.
Yeah, true. I sort of feel like since like the music box has been featuring so prominently throughout the series, and it all is sort of started with this original con, for them to wait so long to tell us like the details of how it all got started sort of just left me going, I wish I'd known this sooner.
Yeah, I could see that. I did like Mozzie wearing the fake hair. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good episode. Don't get me wrong. I really enjoyed it. I just felt like it was maybe a season late.
Okay. I can totally see that. I can see the validity of that. I enjoyed them all meeting and doing the whole lollipop thing, and all that really worked. Yeah. And I could totally see McCaffrey handing him, just walking up to him, realizing, oh, this is the FBI agent that's assigned to my case. I want to go talk to him. Like, all of that is...
incredibly ballsy thing to do.
Yeah, and he would totally do it, so it works. That all works, but I can see your point, though.
Yeah.
All right, next up is Fairly Legal, and that we talked about that last week, and it's a show that probably most of us are watching just because we watch Life. And I thought that the pilot was decent, but not necessarily inspiring, but I gave it a second episode to see what I thought. And the only thing I have to say is... I don't mind the main cases that she gets from the court that seem, you know, pretty big cases or whatever, so it makes sense to have mediation. What I find to be very cliche is, like, she's driving in a cab, and her cabbie hits a guy on a bike, and she mediates on the street. Like, that seems unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's, I know that they're trying to show her nature as, like, a negotiator or a person who will get people to come to a common agreement, and that's what makes her such a good mediator. But, yeah, I really hope that they don't do that as a gimmick with every episode where, like, something strange happens on the street and she's the one who has to step in to resolve the situation because she's there.
Yeah, that seems so contrived, and I feel like it's like one of those situations where you're watching a action film and the star walks into a bar and people pick a fight with him.
Exactly. But I'd have to say overall I do kind of like it. I mean, I'm not really big into legal dramas that much, but it's mediation, which I find a little bit more interesting because it's not straight up court cases.
Right. I thought Oh, go ahead.
And I was kind of disappointed with how she's got this whole Wizard of Oz theme going with all her phone contacts.
Right.
And in the pilot episode, whenever somebody would call, they would play their song as the ringtone. But in the second episode, only the stepmother still had the Wicked Witch theme. Everybody else just reverted to regular rings, which I found a little disappointing because I kind of liked when her brother would call up and hear, "If I only had a brain."
Yeah, I actually, the stepmother is an interesting character. I think the second episode, they did a lot to flesh her out. Because in the first one, I thought she was pretty one-dimensionally evil stepmom. But in the second episode, they do a lot to make you sympathetic to her.
Yeah, and I do like that, and I like how there seems to be more to the father than they originally thought, like, especially with the reading of the will at the end, which I thought, like, halfway through the episode when she was constantly getting distracted from going to the reading of the will, I was like, okay, this has to stop. She needs to just do this.
Right, and that's what everybody else, of course, tells her. But
yeah,
she some kind of way was trying to equate her father's love with the division of how he split up the will. And like she said, she didn't care about money. She didn't care what she got money at all. She just wanted to get more than her stepmother.
Right.
And it's interesting that he split it up four ways like that.
With this fourth guy who they don't know anything about.
I saw some on IMDb. It says that Richard Dean Anderson is going to be on Fairly Legal, and I'm wondering if that's him. Though I can't figure out who he would be, because it's more likely some illegitimate son that none of them know about. So that wouldn't work. But I haven't seen any details to tell me.
Who all I can say is that I hope it's not a gay lover. Because that whole thing has been done to death.
Well, considering he bought a young trophy wife, that would be odd.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do, now that I've seen it on IMDb, I want Richard Anderson to show up, or they tell me it's all a false rumor and it's not going to happen. Either one is fine. Literally every week I'm checking the credits to see if he's in it. Because even if you go to the Fairly Legal site, it says that he's... Because at first I was on his site, and it said he was on it, and I was like, really? So then I went to the Fairly Legal site, and it had Regine Anderson listed. And I'm like, what does that mean? And I don't know if somebody's been screwing around with IMDb or what, but if you guys know out there, please let me know.
Okay.
Because that's half the reason why I'm still watching it.
I would totally watch it for that. I mean, it's an interesting enough show, but I don't know if I would stick with it for too long.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I like her. It feels like if it was just a movie, I would watch it and enjoy it. But week to week, I'm not sure if I can hang with it unless they give me something like, and Richard Dean Anderson has now just joined the cast. And then
exactly.
And then I'm in. But anyway, so I think that it depends on the kind of show you like, whether I'd say this show is for you. It's not bad. It's just not 100% stellar.
Yeah.
So I'll say that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right, so let's now move on to Vampire Diaries.
Oh, man. Vampire Diaries. What I love about this show is that they really don't have a problem showing people in utter agonizing pain. And they kill them. Yeah.
So I'm assuming you're talking about Damon when you say that.
Well, Rose. No, I'm talking about Rose.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, I mean, towards the end, I was really just feeling so bad for her because, like, she was just in such agony.
That is very true. And she, I don't know, I couldn't decide if Elena was being brave or stupid.
I'm not sure either. Like, I'm
stupid.
Yeah. I feel like she's sort of playing both sides, but I don't know if I'm giving Elena too much credit there.
Well, because I know that when she was in the house and Rose is chasing her through the house, and she gets to the room, she puts the barricade up, and it's daylight, I was like, get out of the house. I mean, yeah. There's an open window, you can go off the balcony, and no, she waits until it's dark. I was like, that's stupid. Yeah. Why would you do that?
I'll be outside with a megaphone. You all right in there?
Yeah, really. It's because she was right by the door. She was ready to go out, and then she turns around.
Right. I mean, granted, she was on the second floor, but that's totally doable. You can get out of the second floor, especially if your life depends on it.
Yeah. It's like, would you rather have a broken leg or your throat ripped out?
Exactly. I really was not impressed by Elena this week. Usually, I always give her the benefit of the doubt, and she's usually really smart, but this week she took the stupid pill.
Yeah.
And I like how I know the show so much now that when they were giving out those little glimmers of hope, oh, maybe there's a cure, I'm sitting there like, no, she's dead. She's dead.
Yeah. And poor Damon.
Well, seriously. Yeah, I feel bad, but Damon, you know what? The thing that's interesting about Damon's character is normally my rule, I have this really fast and serious rule about if you're a good guy, you get judged by good guy rules. If you're a bad guy, you get judged by bad guy rules. But Damon is like a weird in between.
He's both. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I don't quite know what scale to put him on. And he's been basically, he's been a good guy for a while, but I take that, like in the finale of season one, he totally tried to kill someone. So I'd say for the majority of this season.
And again, at the end of this episode, he kills somebody.
Right. And so he's very complex. I still love Damon's character. Don't get me wrong. I absolutely love him. But he's at a crossroads, definitely. I like the fact that he's talking about his existential crisis.
Yeah. I'm glad that he just has one.
Right. He's more complex because, I mean, he makes him way more interesting than his brother. Definitely.
And why is Stefan on the show again?
What did Stefan even do this week? Really?
He went off to do something.
He disappeared for like half the episode to go talk to Isabel, and we don't know what happened.
Yeah, we did. I was very disappointed by that. We did not see that conversation, and I feel like I was robbed.
Yeah, me too.
Found out how you spell Isabel.
Thank you, Malcolm. I think that Stefan is only interesting when he's semi-evil himself, and he hasn't been there in a while. I do think it's interesting that he's trying to drink the vervain so that he could become immune. Like I don't know if it's because Catherine is immune, he feels like he needs to become immune, or the fact that he found out it's possible that he's trying to do it.
I think it's a bit of both, just so that since he discovered it's possible, of course he wants to try it. And then also, if Catherine is immune and he becomes immune, then he's more her equal and can confront her better, I guess.
Yeah, but the difference is Catherine's 500 years old. He's only maybe 200. There's no way he's going to be able to be her equal. It's just not going to happen.
I think he's taking it so he can... So I think he thinks he's taking it so he can take on Klaus.
Ah.
Well, that's just silly.
Yeah, if you're going up against a vamp that can actually control your mind, that's
it. Being immune to vervain is not going to do a thing.
No. Yeah, nice try with that. Next, as he gets his head ripped off.
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone needs to stop kissing me.
That was pretty good. I mean, I think they're doing a really good job with that love triangle because I can't decide who I want Caroline with. I like her with
Tyler, both. Tyler, because Matt's a dummy.
Well, I like Matt's sincere. I like his sincerity.
So let him go find a sincere girlfriend.
He's kind of he's kind of ignorant at this point. Like, it's just coming off as more ignorant than anything else.
That's because nobody's telling him what's happening.
Yeah, but he's the fact that he still has not put anything together, like, unlike the way Elena did, is sort of like, I can't respect you now.
Well,
Elena's brother figured it out.
Her brother, but he's been exposed to more. He's in the house, so he's seen more stuff. I do think that a cramp in the whole triangle is going to be the fact that that werewolf chick told Tyler that Caroline's been lying to him, which is totally true.
I can't remember. It's like, did she kill Mason?
No, she didn't.
That's what I thought.
Damon killed Mason.
Better hurry up with Jewel's storyline, because I give her 3 episodes tops.
Oh, yeah, because Damon's totally going to kill her.
Oh, yeah.
But she said she's getting reinforcements, and that's all fine and good, but if it's not a full moon, it totally doesn't matter. You know?
Yeah, but like when she said she's getting reinforcements, all I could think was, oh, God, we're going to have a Twilight vampire werewolf battle, aren't we?
Of course.
Well, that we've got a while before the new full moon, so I'm kind of like, I mean... If Damon is smart, which he usually is in these situations, he's going to go after her before the full moon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's how he dealt with Mason, and I don't see why he would do her any differently. Especially since she killed Rose.
Ooh, I wonder if there's an original werewolf, too.
Oh, you mean like an alpha or something?
Yeah, like Klaus.
Like a Klaus for the werewolves.
I have no idea. That would be an interesting thought.
It would be, yeah.
And then maybe they can change whenever they want. Not just the full moon.
What I'm thinking.
That's an interesting thought. I like it. Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead and write that up.
Okay, I'll do my space script right now.
All right, so let's move on to 30 Rock.
I liked it, but I always like 30 Rock.
Well, actually, last week's 30 Rock was fantastic. It was like one of the best episodes they've had in a really long time.
Yeah.
I think this week's episode was more mediocre. Like, there were some laughs, but there was a sad moment where GE turns to the Cable Town symbol.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much exactly what happened to NBC and Comcast this week. So
right.
It was very appropriate.
And I love how they're, like, mirroring it and mocking it, and amazingly, nobody has said to them, stop doing this.
Yeah, it works, and I totally like it.
I thought it was funny how Tracy and Liz were having a fight but didn't want to fight on camera with this reality show going on, so they would try to do it with stuff that they couldn't get the rights for so that they couldn't show the footage. Like having an argument while singing it to the tune of Uptown Girl.
Yes, and Liz sucked at it. Considering she's a writer, she should have been better at that.
Yeah.
I thought the story with... Oh, and I liked the end of that, the resolution of that, when they had the fight and they wanted them to make up, and they're like, no. And so then they get these other actors to pretend to be them and do it. That was fantastic. And it was like, it was cut together, so it was very obviously not them.
Right.
But that was pretty good. I liked all that. And then they were like, oh, that was so sweet. And then they hugged for real. That was great.
Yeah.
However, the whole Lutz and the writers' catastrophe storyline was pretty bad. That was not very good. And Jack Donaghy with his alternate mayhem or his telethon for some tragedy that you don't know about in the future, and he was trying to film it to be ahead. That was great, and it ended up being Mel Gibson was the only one who was a victim.
I thought that was hilarious. Like Mel Gibson and his like white supremacist buddy are like the only victims in the disaster.
That was pretty good. Like, that and just showing... Well, one, it shows where people's sentiments are right now, which is interesting. But it just shows that, you shouldn't try to film a natural disaster thing ahead of time. It totally doesn't work.
Or at least don't launch it before you know that Mel Gibson wasn't involved.
Yes, I think that's a good frame right there. But I also think it goes to my theory that 30 Rock episodes that are the quality is proportional to the amount of time that Jack and Liz spend together in the episode.
Absolutely.
So this one was like, it was okay.
Yeah. Right. I agree. Yeah, Jack and Liz are, they make the show.
Right. And put them together in a room and you have gold.
Totally.
All right. Next up is French. Go.
What is with cutting people's fingers off on TV?
What, you don't like that?
Oh my gosh. I was like, oh, flashbacks.
You make it sound like somebody has cut your fingers off or something, but...
This episode made me cry personally just because I've been working on my own sci-fi stories and they're exactly like this. the device that has been sitting underground for eons. There's one person who is linked to it somehow. It can destroy the universe. I'm like, oh, how do they get on my story?
Because if you don't hurry up and write it, somebody else will.
Apparently, it was a great episode, but I just was like, oh, now I can't write my story.
Well, come up with something else. Write it quickly.
Yeah.
This episode, I thought, they were trying to give us an interesting insight into the faux Olivia. Though, oh, I cringed when they said, oh, we're calling her faux Olivia. They're like, oh, it's something we came up with. I mean, and I was kind of thinking, You mean like the internet came up with it and you guys copied it?
Yeah, I was like when they said we're calling her faux Olivia now, I'm like, wait, didn't Olivia call her faux Olivia like at the start of season 3?
Yes, that is what, because that's what we call her on the internet. And yeah. And then they copied it and the Walternate thing was the same thing. They called him Walternate on the web and then the show started calling him Walternate. And I'm
like... If nothing else, it shows they're paying attention to what the fans are saying.
Well, that's true, but it's weird. It's just
8 years from now, no one will remember that's where it came from anyway.
Well, that's all fine and good, but it's still weird because that's just like, that's what we've been doing. Why are you guys listening to us? It's strange. But so that threw me off a little bit. But I did like reading the diaries of faux Olivia and finding out what's in her head. And also... You have the darkness that Peter has now, which I'm not quite sure where they're going with that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I like it either, because he's so cold now.
I don't know if I like it either, but, like, it's more intriguing because, like, is this him or is it something the device did to him?
Right.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me. It seems like the device turned on the Manchurian Candidate switch or something in him.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's an interesting thought. All right.
And we have chimp DNA.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Oh god, that was so funny.
Yeah, it's just like I'm feeling like I want some overripe bananas. And then
which is weird because I don't like bananas.
And he's like, you can label that chimp DNA now. We've got that one in the box. I was going, what are you talking about?
I think the only thing I didn't like about this week's episode was they didn't let Astrid use her powers, but I thought that they had another good opportunity to let her do it.
That's true. They're very inconsistent. Like, sometimes Astrid is super, super smart and has these ridiculous kind of brain powers, and sometimes she's washing the windows. And I'm like, pick. Yeah. You can't have it both ways, man. Either she's super smart or she's not.
Yeah, and especially since the password was so lame. I was like, oh, come on. She couldn't figure that out? Jeez.
Can't remember. Yeah, that's true. What was the password?
It was Olive.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, Peter figured it out. So.
Well, you see, that's the thing. Is like, did Peter figure it out, or did the device give him this information?
How would the device give him the information? Because the device is thousands of years old, and Olivia's not.
Well, like Malcolm said, like, it's a Manchurian Candidate sort of thing. Maybe, like, it just sort of, like, turns on some sort of internal computer with him or something.
Hmm. Or something that they did to him while he was over there. They you know, because he's supposed to be inside the device, so maybe they set some stuff up.
Because it seemed like he had no opportunity to really hack it.
Right. That's what I was wondering. I was like, how did he get all that information? How did he figure out her password? Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
that's actually a little scary.
Because when Walter looked at his paperwork, he basically had all the names circled already.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point. I have no idea. But that is interesting. I don't know if I want Peter to be evil. That's all.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And I like the whole argument where Peter's all like, you know, he's just killed a couple more of the bots. And he's like, I'm not doing anything wrong. They're not even human, blah, 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 blah. And the dad is like, well, if you didn't do anything wrong, why are you lying? And why are you hiding?
Yeah.
And I was like, very valid point.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised that Walter didn't give the whole thing away.
Did he actually get the DNA thing to help regenerate his brain, or is he still has he still not gotten that?
He's still trying to give himself treatments. He's giving himself drugs to try to help himself, but we don't know how well that's working. But I guess Walter does spout off kind of crazy stuff, but I guess if his son's on the line, you know, he thinks most rationally when his son's life is in jeopardy. He can think very clearly. So, but I do like the fact that he feels like I need to be smarter to fight Walternate. And I was like, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Because Walternate now
has rat DNA next week.
When he's going to eat cheese. All right. I think that's about it for this particular podcast.
No, Spartacus.
Oh, you're right. Oh, my God. I didn't write it down.
I set mine to purpose.
Oh, God, I need to watch this.
Oh, Spartacus is fantastic. I don't know how I forgot about it. I totally watched it last night. It was actually, after I watched it, I called one of my friends like, oh, we got to talk about Spartacus. Because the thing I have to say about Gods of the Arena is I kind of forgot how much I loved and hated Batiatus in season one. You love him, you hate him, you love him, you hate him, you love him, you hate him. And I totally forgot about that, especially because the first episode of this prequel, they basically leave him in a bloody mess, and you're like, oh, Batiatus is, you know, they beat the crap out of him, and you feel bad for him and everything. And there's this moment where after the guys have totally just jacked him up, and they're like, okay, now you're going to do what we told you, and we're going to send a message to you, so you do what we tell you to do now. And I was thinking, you don't know Batiatus. And I was laughing about that, going, you don't understand how this man's mind works. And what's kind of cool,
I had a revelation this week that he's like that because of this very moment. This is what made him like that.
You think so?
Yeah, because that whole beginning where they were showing him just going through it, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is why when he does revenge, he does it upright, because he had it done to him first.
That's true. I mean, I'm sure this is probably the first time anybody's ever even laid a finger on him before in his life. But I like the fact that the name of the episode is called Missio, and I was like, what the heck does that mean? And when you find out what it means, you're like, oh. You know, so that all works together, and you understand in season one when Spartacus does the whole Missio thing, how everybody looks down on him because Batiatus has made it so that in his ludus, no one ever surrenders. So that's like such a big, big deal. And all of that really works. And I was totally on Batiatus' side for like most of the episode. For like 60 to 70% of the episode, I was like, all right, you got to get him. You got to, you know, get these guys. And his whole plotting and his revenge all worked for me. And I was like, oh, it's too bad that other guy got jacked up. But, you know, I was totally on Batiatus' side all the way till the end. And then I was like, I hate Batiatus, man. Like, I was almost tearing up talking about how much, you know, it's just, he totally screwed those guys at the end. It was just awful. And it's all going to come back and be just so bad.
And that wasn't even, like, the worst thing that happened that episode. That whole thing with Animaeus' wife, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding
That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the end. I'm talking about Animaeus' wife. Like, that's the point where I start to hate Batiatus again.
That was so bad.
That was, and it's going to be worse. As soon as Animaeus finds out about it, it's over, man. That's just lights out. It's going to be bad. And
I just said, oh, now I know how Gannicus dies.
That's what I was thinking. But the thing is I can't blame Gannicus. It's not his fault. You know what I mean? Nope. Like, I'm not mad at Gannicus about that. And I don't think she's mad at Gannicus either. It's very uncomfortable and it's very traumatic. But I don't think she's angry at him. Because it really wasn't. I mean, what choice did they have? If he didn't do what they told him to do, they would have just killed him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, my other revelation for this episode was I really love the work that they're doing with the language on this show. The way they make English sound like Latin is so, so cool.
Right. Well, the language has always been... Well, I give you yes and no. The way that they do the language is very interesting, but they swear a lot in a very base manner, which kind of throws that off a little bit.
Well, that's how the Romans are. I mean, you can look at their graffiti. They were very... Oh, man.
it's pretty crass, but... Mm-hmm. And then they end in an orgy, which I didn't quite see that one coming. Well, I don't know why I didn't. I guess I should have. But so I can't figure out what that means exactly. I was like, are now they like a, instead of a couple, are they like a triple? But I don't think that Badiatis would be happy with having Gaia there permanently. Like he
and
loved,
then orgies were very, very common. So that's just the way they do it.
Right. But I'm just saying, I don't think that they're like, necessarily means anything. I think for Gaia, it means a little bit because she has a thing for Lucretia. She's got a thing for Lucretia, so she was more into it because of that. I just think that Badiatis was like, all right, another woman wants to join, whatever. You know, so...
Yeah. I just can't wait till she gets killed by Lucretia for, you know, getting down with Crixus.
Oh, you think that's what's going to happen?
Oh, yeah, because, you know, she's not around, and Lucretia, who supposedly doesn't like Crixus, you know, well, we know what happens there.
Yeah, I figure that the guy is going to sleep with Crixus at some point. I mean, I figure that's coming, but why would Lucretia care? She wouldn't care what
because everybody kills everybody on this show.
That's true. I just think that that's not going to be the reason. I agree with you that I figure that Gaia's end will probably be at Lucretia's hand. I think that's going to be what changes Lucretia, because Lucretia is like totally different now than she was in season one. She's a completely different person. Like, I think Badiatis is close to what he was like before. I mean, there's not that big of a difference in his personality, but Lucretia has a huge difference in personality. And I agree that part of that is probably because she's going to end up killing her friend. But for some revenge reason that we of yet have no idea what that is. I seriously doubt it's over Crixus, because Lucretia's not even looking at Crixus at this point. So it's got to be something else. It's got to be something else. And maybe as a trophy, she takes Crixus as hers after it's over. That's how I see it. That's my call. I got nothing. I mean, we have no idea. We're speculating at this point. But yeah, thumbs up. Gods of the Arena has... I was afraid, I think I said a couple weeks ago, I was afraid that Spartacus was going to just be fighting and orgies and stuff at the beginning of season one. But, I mean, at the beginning of episode one. But it ended really well, and this episode was all plot. And I can't wait for Badiatis and his friend, the guy who brought the wine. What is that dude's name?
I can't remember.
That dude, because in season one, they're enemies. So, and they're best friends now. And I think we just saw the beginning dividing line that's going to come between them and how they're going to become enemies. Because I totally want to see... I totally want to see how that happens. It's going to be ugly. And it's going to be fantastic.
What's messed up, though, is he doesn't seem like that bad a guy yet. I was like, oh, dude.
I know. Yeah, he seems like a nice guy, exactly. And it's like, oh, that's why they're friends, because he's a nice guy. But he's so evil in season one. It's crazy. And so that's what I love about this prequel, is all the characters that you know in season one, which is like, I think they said it's about 5 years difference, that in that 5 years they become, you know, totally different people. And I could actually, truthfully, watch all the rest of the 5 years. I would like, just give me those seasons. That would be great. But, you know, we're not going to do that. We're going to continuation of season one, which is fine too. Well, we don't have Badiatis. All right. Anyway.
Okay, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Since this is a prequel, how important is it to watch Blood and Sand before watching this?
Well, I would say it's not that important, except that in the open of the very first episode, it says previously on Spartacus, and it runs through the entire season one.
Okay.
So
also there's some themes and stuff that if you've seen like where all this leads, it's like it's like an extra gem seeing
right.
where it germinates.
Exactly. I mean, it's more of a payoff. They're assuming that you've seen season one when they're giving you the prequel. So mm-hmm. all the stuff, like that scene like I was talking about where Body Adams gets beat down and the guy thinks that that's going to convince him to do what they want. I was like, dude, you do not know Body Adams. And so you wouldn't have that reaction if you hadn't seen season one.
Okay. And the thing like with the how Dottori got his job, that was awesome.
Yeah. And Dottori, his story makes way more sense if you've seen season one. And all the surprises and there's a lot of surprises in the prequel that wouldn't be surprises if you know if you don't see it in order.
If you didn't know. Okay. Right. All right, then I'll watch season one first.
And season one is now back on Netflix Instant. It was off for a while when they were trying to sell the DVDs and Blu-rays, but now it's back. So
I know. Yeah. So I'm gonna give it another look. I only got like maybe two or three episodes into it before, but I'm gonna give it another go.
Yay! It's the episode The Pit is the hump, as I call it. You got to get over that hump of that episode. Uh-huh. And then once you're over that one, then it gets way better. Like I think that's the last.
Bodies until that comes up. Both so, ways take that. Both
which
ways.
Episode is The Pit?
It's like the fourth episode, I think.
Okay, all right. So I'm almost there.
Yeah. What were you saying, Malcolm? I couldn't hear you actually.
I was saying that he should just pay attention to the bodies, and you can take that both ways until The Pit.
Yes, there's a lot of eye candy on this show, but. If it was all eye candy and that was it, I wouldn't be talking about it on the podcast, you know?
Okay, yeah.
So it really, the story is fantastic. The eye candy is an extra bonus.
Okay, cool.
So we're going to wrap this up for this week. And remember, you can send us feedback at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at tvcampfire. We're on Facebook. And I promise I will actually try to update my blog. And hopefully we'll have some people comment over there at tvcampfire.com. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Toodles.